Ladies and gentlemen of Lafayette.
The Hammered Down Show with Jared Jesulaitis is Lafayette's number one sports show.
Yes, I'm excited!
He totally went to Jared.
The voice of Lafayette sports.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better.
Send us your thoughts on the text line at 765-447-4080.
Now go to that voodoo that you do so well!
Going to be on with us here. So absolutely stacked Friday. We're good to go. Let's get it started. Need to know news time.
Here's your need to know news.
All right. What about Adam Schenck, man? I told you I was a holder of a top 20 Adam Schenck at like 4.5 to 1. I think is what it was. I used a boost on it too. So I look vested in my man, Adam Schenck. And he did not disappoint today. One under for the round. He's at even, sitting at 20th. The cut projected to be +4. Adam Schenck's into the weekend at the Masters. You'll love to see it. Winning conditions. I'll tell you, he was up as high as 9th at one point. He bogeyed 17 and dropped them down. It's a real big log jam once we get past 7th, right? We got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys tied for 8th, and then another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 tied for 14th. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tied at 20. Way to go, man. End of the second day. Huge win. Wonder what he was to make the cut. He had to be a little over. He had to be like 150 or something to make the cut. If that's the odds I was getting on top 20, I would think. So, yeah. Congratulations to everybody that cashed. Way to go, Adam. Let's go, baby. Bring it home for Boilermaker Nation. We did not have a lot of sports last night, right? But the Cubs and Sox are both back at it tonight. First, the Southsiders at home hosting the 6-6 Reds. It's Abbott taking on Flexen. Flexen's not good. Cubs roll out Wicks in Seattle to take on Bryce Miller. Cincy -170. Chicago, the road dogs here, but they're even money, so expecting a tight one in Seattle tonight. Probably not going to be a tight one up at the Madhouse in Madison, where the Blackhawks host the Predators tonight. Nashville listed at -250. Preds have won all previous three meetings, putting up at least 3 goals in every game so far. We didn't have any NBA action last night, but we do tonight. The Pacers, a big one in Cleveland tonight. They're a game behind Cleveland in Orlando, trying to climb up as high as the 4 seed here in the playoffs. They're 2.5-point road dogs in Cleveland tonight. Meanwhile, the Bulls in the play-in tourney and in D.C. tonight, 1.5-point road dogs are Chicago. Also of note, like I said, Orlando up there in the 4 seed right now. They were in Philly tonight, where they'll take on the 76ers, who revealed their Allen Iverson statue today. It's so small. Like, it's like the size of the Heisman. It's crazy. I couldn't believe it. I thought it would be much bigger. It's not. Philly is a 7.5-point favorite tonight over Orlando. So, the Pacers win, coupled with the Magic loss. We now got a 3-way tie there at 4-5-6. How that shakes out exactly, I did not get a whole lot of time to get into, but we'd only have a couple of games left and the Pacers would be right there for a 4 seed, which would be, you know, absolutely be huge. Pacers remaining schedule includes at home against the Hawks on Sunday. Cleveland's remaining schedule would be the Hornets at home on Sunday. And then Orlando's remaining schedule would be the Bucks on Sunday. So very real chance for the Pacers Because what, the Hornets are eliminated, right? Milwaukee is number two. Yeah, very real. Could very much happen. Looking forward to that. There you go. That is today's Need to Know News for this Friday, April the 12th. All right. Boy, Masters yesterday, right? Did I sit here? I said we were on ESPN Bet yesterday. I advised you Tiger hit the fairway on one. Was it minus 160? Yeah. Did it hit? Also, yeah. So I'm not going to apologize for that one. Did I also tell you about Tiger to birdie one at plus 900? And what happened? Cash it. Let's go. Good start there. I mean, that basically made up for the earlier mishaps on the Tuesday and Wednesday. So we're back at it tonight. What are we looking at? We can get back into baseball. You want to get back into baseball tonight? I think we can do that. You're Cubs fans, right? I know you. Look, I fade Flexen. No problem tonight. I haven't even looked at any of the variables, but like, I don't trust Flexen whatsoever for the White Sox. But let's go to the Cubs. They're up in Seattle. They're taking on the Mariners. And we're looking at Jonathan Wicks. And the strikeout prop is 5.5. We want to go over on this one. All right. First off, I love this because it's paying plus 120. All right. Metrics support a 30% K rate after two starts. Easily cash this in the last game. Mariners have the fourth highest swing and miss rate in the league. Wicks has a 36% K rate against right-handed batters this season. Seattle will have 8 of them. T-Mobile Park does pretty good for strikeouts. We're in the plus money here. We're taking Jonathan Wicks today. Over 5.5 strikeouts. That's going to be the play for me here today. Like I said, I don't have to do any research. And I'm ready to just fade Flexen on the south side. Now, here's the problem. You do have a wind blowing out to dead-centered 18 miles per hour tonight. It's going to be in the upper 50s. Humidity's kind of low. Over-under set at 9, but like, How bad has Flexen been in that first start? So White Sox still missing a lot of bats here. He's 0-2, 5.91 ERA. He has 5 strikeouts. 5 in 2 starts. He's given up 4 and 3 runs in each one of his starts as well. Righties are hitting 320 off of him. I mean, it's bad. His K rate at home is 2.1 per 9. There's just so many bad metrics for him. Candelario is 3-for-4 lifetime off of him. He's about the only guy with anything in that lineup for the Reds that has any kind of experience with him. But he's not good. You got 6 righties in this one. Candelario, of course, a switch guy. You may want to key on him for a hit tonight. Just throwing that out there. Flex has given up an average of 6 hits per start. I'm not going with it. We'll take the Wicks. Now I've talked myself into Candelario to maybe get 2 bases. And a win from the Reds. Yeah, I think I'm into that. I'm very much into that. Don't forget, use the ESPN bet, and you must be 21. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Okay, don't you go anywhere. Coming up next, Tom Dienhart, GoldenBlack.com. He's going to be my guest. You don't want to miss out on that talk. He's coming up next. We're going to talk a little bit about the spring game. That's tomorrow. Even so, in a day with the basketball, I think you forgot about the situation with football. So let's talk with him about that and more next. It's the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7TheHammer.com. Hey. We're back on the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7TheHammer.com. We're going over to the Hammerhead Hotline. We're bringing in my good buddy and sports spiritual leader, Tom Dienhart from GoldenBlack.com. He's on with us here. You've been so worked up over March Madness that I think you forgot that we're in the midst of football stuff here. Tom, it's great to have you back. Excited for the spring game coming up here on Saturday. I can't believe we're actually having... Is this going to be a game or is this going to be more like a scrimmage? What can fans expect if they get out to Ross-Ade Stadium on Saturday?
It's going to be a game. It's going to be like a game, four quarters. They're going to have about a two-hour window. It's going to be on TV, on BTN, showing live. So they'll have some special things. It won't really be special teams. They're not going to be totally live tackling with the first team guys. But they're going to do all they can to try to make it as really game-like as they can.
That's great because, you know, last year we don't have it because of the renovations. And then, you know, a couple of those Brom eras, they turned into just – little scrimmage. They weren't even scrimmages. You know, they kind of they didn't play the game. It was just kind of very, very watered down. And it was just, I'm glad we're kind of returning to that spring game atmosphere a little bit, Tom.
Yeah, I think fans like it. You know, you can never take too much out of the spring football game or even spring football practice, but just a chance to sort of whet the appetite and give fans a feel for what the team may look like. And, you know, for Purdue especially, there's so many new guys here. You know, they brought in 14 portal guys. They got here in January. A lot of them are going to play big roles this year, the early enrollees, the freshmen are here as well. So a lot of new faces on that roster this year.
Yeah, and I know there's another portal opportunity to open up after the spring games, which, you know, I'm sure will be Purdue will probably be pretty active, at least in one role there. Let's talk about this game here on Saturday, and let's start talking about some of these units that people are going to want to keep an eye on here. If there is a unit that scares you the most in terms of maybe talent and depth combined, what unit are you most worried about going into the spring game?
Well, I think the defensive line, that's an area I think it still has a lot to prove, especially the interior guys. I think they're good at the nose spot with Cole Brevard, Mo Amonade, good anchors on the nose, but two guys to flank the nose, I think, you know, those are areas that they could use a few more playmakers. And the rush in spot, the guys right off the edge, the pass rushers, you know. Of course, Nick Scorton's gone.
Yeah.
Transfer to Texas A&M. Kydren Jenkins has been moved to inside linebacker. They brought in three rush ins from the portal. They still have Will Helt, who I think has a chance to be a special player. I think they could use maybe a little bit more spark off the edge. So just overall, that defensive line is an area I think it really bears watching.
How has that move for Jenkins worked at inside linebacker? Have you had a chance to talk to him this week or the coaches? How has he been adapting to that? Is that a better use of his skill set? Talk a little bit about that move.
We haven't had a chance to talk to him this spring. He's had to leave practice early on Tuesdays and Thursdays when we're there because of a class conflict. But we talked to, you know, the coaches, some of his teammates, they all say he's so far so good. And he's 6 foot one, 260 pounds, a little bit undersized for an end. So he's going to be a jumbo linebacker right there in the middle of the defense. Can't run away from him. And it's going to be different, though, right? Playing on 2 feet, playing right in the middle of the defense. So he's going to have to adapt. But I tell you what, just from what we've seen from him as a pass rusher, you know, he's the ultimate warrior, as they say. Just a tough guy who seems to be a lot of those classic middle linebacker traits. And, you know, for him too, Jared, middle linebacker is probably his best chance to play in the NFL. He wasn't going to play in the NFL as a defensive end or an outside linebacker. This will give him a year to sort of try to get his feet wet and maybe show the pro scouts that he indeed could maybe be an inside linebacker at the next level.
We're talking with Tom Dienhart here from GoldenBlack.com on our Hammerhead Hotline, the spring game for football. Coming up here tomorrow at Ross-Ade Stadium. Let's shift a little bit over the offense here, Tom. And, of course, people are excited about Hudson Card coming back. Some changes maybe in a little bit in the backfield because of attrition here. And, of course, It just seems like now the, remember we used to wonder who was going to start at quarterback every season. Now I feel like that vibe has shifted out to the wide receivers. Give me some clarity here on what this offense is going to look like and some of the guys we are going to get excited about here in the spring.
Probably the two positions that were impacted the most by the portal are on offense, the line and the receiving core. They brought in three portal receivers. They brought in four portal offensive linemen plus two junior college offensive linemen. So they've really improved the depth up front. They've gotten bigger up front. They hope that translates into a team that's more physical, especially in short yardage situations in the red zone. Plus, they've got some good veteran anchors back. You know, Gus Hartwig, Marcus Bowe are the guys who are really going to anchor that group up front. You know, the wideouts, Jared, you know, they lost their top three wideouts to the portal. You know, guys like Yassine left, Abdur-Rahman Yassine. Of course, Deion Burks went to Oklahoma. And T.J. Sheffield all left, so they had to do some work in the portal. They went out, they got two kids from Georgia. They got a kid from UCLA. The name to know, I think, is the one of the Georgia kids, C.J. Smith. He's a raw toy. He's a real burner with Olympic-caliber speed. He's a guy to keep your eye on. And also, Jamal Edron. Big 6'3" wideout who actually got here last year, Jared, but he got hurt in August, suffered a season-ending knee injury. They thought last year he was probably going to be their top wideout. Of course, they didn't get to see him. Now he's back. He's healthy. Probably not going to see a lot of him on Saturday, but that's a guy I think could end up being Purdue's alpha wide receiver next year.
So what you're telling me is there's not a lot of knowns here, but at the same time, the ceiling seems pretty darn high, especially for that group at wide receiver.
Yeah, I think there's some potential there. They have to obviously produce. They're also bringing in a junior college transfer, a 6'5" kid. We'll get here in May. So you're right. As far as just looking at the raw talent, it definitely looks good. But they certainly have something to prove once the lights come on Saturdays.
Yeah, I know we don't. We're not going to worry about special teams here. But at the same time, I know Purdue. With the kicking and with the punting, there were some questions here. Have those been answered, or is that something they still need to figure out in the portal after the spring game?
Yeah, they'll have to figure out special teams later. Like I said, they're not going to really do special teams in the spring game. They don't want to have those big collisions. But there's no doubt the kicking's got to get better. The guy who's going to kick for him, the guy who's going to kick off for him, I don't even hear yet. They have the kid from Brownsburg, Indiana, coming up. Spencer Porath should be your place kicker. They got a kid from UCLA. R.J. Lopez will probably kick off. And punting, Jared, you know, they still need to get a punter. I think that's going to happen in the portal here in April. So, and plus, they got to find guys who are going to run back kicks. They're still auditioning players, and one of those guys who are auditioning is Dylan Thieneman. So, you know, punting, kicking, return game, there's a lot of unanswered questions of special teams, and they're going to remain unanswered until you get to training camp in August.
How do you feel about Dylan Thieneman returning kicks? I'm not telling anybody how to do their job. That makes me, that makes me a little bit nervous, and I don't want to see him get worn down any more than he needs to.
I don't think so. I think he's a playmaker. He's fast. He's tough. One of the fastest guys on the team. He could be a lot like the kid that was Iowa last year, Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
I mean, why not get the ball in his hands? He loves it. And a chance to make big plays as a punt returner. So it'd be interesting to see if he's a guy that can maybe win a role running back kicks for Purdue this year.
If they make it, are you anticipating some more portal moves then after this game? And if so, I mean, what are the areas of need? I know you talked about we just talked about kicking and stuff like that, but I can't imagine there's going to be another offensive lineman come in, but what are they looking at once the spring game's over?
I think it's four or five spots still. They want to get a punter, like I said. They want to get a long snapper. Forgot to mention that. Those are two of their top priorities. I think they need an interior defensive lineman. I sort of spoke on that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think Purdue wants to get a bigger inline tight end. A guy could almost be like a de facto offensive lineman because they could bring him for short yardage situations to mostly block. I think in a perfect world they could find a running back who was a real speedster. They like their backs, Jared, but they'd like to get a guy with maybe a little bit more speed. And they also, I think, want to get another defensive back. a guy who plays that star position, which is like a cornerback slash safety. I think those are the areas that when it comes to the portal in April, they're going to be looking to try to add players if they can.
Hey, since we're doing the spring game here, and it's the only position literally we have not really, you know, mentioned as a need or anything like that, it's Hudson Card's job, right? But, I mean, I keep on hearing some rumblings that maybe some of these young guys are looking pretty darn impressive. Kind of give me a little rundown of what's after Hudson Card, the quarterback spot.
And Hudson Card's an unquestioned starter. He has a chance to maybe be one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten this year. We shall see. And, yeah, his backup, that's going to be one of the more intriguing, I think, spots to see how it develops and unfolds here once they get to training camp. I think the battle's going to come down to two guys. I think one's going to be Ryan Brown, who played a little bit last year, a big quarterback from Florida. And I think the true freshman, Marcos Davila, has a chance to maybe compete to be the number two quarterback. He looks good getting off the bus, you know. Got a big arm, was a big recruit. He's here already, obviously. And he may be your quarterback in the future. And maybe they want to get his feet wet this year. Maybe they want to give him that confidence, give him a lot of practice reps. So, again, it's going to be fun to watch him develop and see who indeed is the backup quarterback. And like I said, it's probably going to come down, I think, between Ryan Brown and Marcos Davila.
Well, there you go. Dylan Thiedemann can't play every spot, that's for sure. But there you go. It's Don Dienhardt, goldenblack.com. Spring game is tomorrow. Again, if you can't make it out on BTN, it sounds like, and a little bit more like a game than it's been a scrimmage over the past year. So it's great to see that back. Make sure you follow Tom at goldenblack.com because that portal will open right back up again, and there'll be rumors and names and all those things you want to know about it. Tom's got you covered. Dom, it's always a pleasure having you on this program, man, and I'm excited we're starting to round back into football season again, my friend. Take care.
Take care. Be good, Jared.
Thank you, Tom. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. Hey, I have got Sam King, Lafayette Journal and Courier, next here on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Back on the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer, 101.7thehammer.com. The celebrities don't stop being on the air here with us here. Sam King of the Journal and Courier on with us here. He is finally back in Indiana after a nice week out there in Arizona. Sam, great to have you here. An incredible week and weekend for Purdue fans in Phoenix out in Glendale. A Final Four. I'll tell you what. The memories, it was just crazy. What was it like from your perspective there early on in the week, and then when the fans start filing in there? Kind of just give me your 15,000-foot view of your experience.
Yeah, so I got out there Wednesday, and then Thursday was kind of walking around doing some things, and I was like, you know, not sure there's a whole lot of Purdue fans out here. And then by the end of Thursday night, early Friday, totally transitioned, and I was like, I think there's only Purdue fans out here. Surely there were UConn fans out there. There were fans of North Carolina State, probably had the second most fans there. But when you looked at the percentage of fans, especially on that championship Monday in the crowd, it was 60-70% at least Purdue fans, and they showed out. If you went out to restaurants or bars or anything like that hours before the game, it was completely packed with black and gold, and, you know, obviously this has been 44 years in the making, and I think a lot of people took advantage of the opportunity to get out there and see something that, for most of them, they haven't seen in their lifetime. So, you know, while it wasn't a national championship, you would have liked to have seen Purdue win one more game and kind of get that monkey off the back. In that regard, it was probably great for a lot of these fans that got to experience a Final Four for the first time.
What was it like in the aftermath of Monday's game? I'm sure some disappointment stuff, but talking to players, talking to coaches after the loss to UConn, what was their temperament like? What was the body language telling you? Kind of give me that experience.
Well, you have to take into account that a year ago I walked into a locker room after Purdue got beat by a 16 seed. So that was you walked in that locker room and every guy had his head down, didn't want to look at you, tried not to make eye contact with reporters. A little bit different this time. I mean, there were some guys who were visibly upset. You could just tell the emotion on their face, but, it was a different demeanor in the fact that you did play in the national championship game. You played probably one of the greatest men's basketball teams ever in that UConn team. When you look at the you know, probably having three lottery picks on that team, the season that it had, the Final Four dominance, the whole tournament dominance, I guess, just beating everybody in that tournament by at least 14 points. He lost to an all-time great team, and I think that now that you can peel it back a little bit and see it from an outsider's perspective, you can say, yeah, it's such an all-time great team to keep Purdue from getting a national championship. And the same can be said about 1969. He was to that UCLA team with Lou Alcindor on it. Purdue, you know, maybe two best teams ever ran into just a buzzsaw in a championship game. But these guys are proud of what they accomplished. They were willing to talk about it for the most part. One guy I really wanted to get to was Lance, because he was, I think he had more fun than anybody this season. And when he checked out for the final time, a lot of guys seemed upset, and he was just smiling, walking over, high-fiving everybody, telling everybody, hey, thanks for letting me be a part of this, because he couldn't fathom a year ago being on a team that was playing for a national championship. So it was, you know, kind of disappointing they didn't win, but also kind of realizing that they've maybe raised the bar for Purdue basketball moving forward, where now it's not just trying to win a Big Ten or trying to get to that second weekend of the tournament. Now there's kind of an expectation of we can get to Final Fours and compete for national titles, and now we have that kind of proof to show that it's possible.
We're talking with Sam King of the Lafayette Journal-Courier here on the Hammerhead Hotline. We talked a lot. We always talk a lot about high school football when you covered that beat, and we talk a lot about Central Catholic and why they would always be so successful, because, you know, to learn how to win in those tournaments, like, it sounds like a cliche, but it's really not. You need to learn how to do it, what it takes, and how to conduct yourself, prepare yourself, practice, all that stuff. Have you talked to Matt Painter at all? Do you feel like he's learned something through this process on how he's going to carry Purdue through future tournaments? What's the positive takeaways here from the experience for Purdue?
Yeah, the tournament is still a kind of a wild beast where it all comes down to matchups. But speaking of Purdue, SID Chris Foreman said earlier this year, some point during the season, just randomly talking before or after a practice, and he said, why are the same teams the ones that always get back to the Final Fours and win titles? The UConn, the North Carolinas, Duke, schools like that. And it probably goes back to what you're saying. Once you do it once or twice, it just kind of becomes the expectation. And, you know, everybody who is a major recruit wants to play for a winner. Clearly, Purdue has one of its best classes ever coming in as a freshman group next year. So now you hope to take that bar and you know, make that the standard, whereas, you know, you look at, can Purdue get back to the Final Four, and people are already saying, hey, 2 years from now, Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith are going to be seniors, Trey Kaufman and Wren's going to be a senior, the Final Four is in Indianapolis, and when you look at the group coming in mixed with that, you know, it's probably not going to be too much into the future. It's not going to be 44 years before Purdue's back here, and Athletic Director Mike Lubinsky kind of told me the same thing before the North Carolina State game. He said, this isn't the end for us. This is the beginning for us, because now we've done it. This is now going to become kind of routine, hopefully, is the plan.
Sam, it is the end, though, for Ethan Morton and Mason Gillis, both hopping into the portal. I know some of this stuff seemed to be expected, but, you know, they went through their senior day stuff. Talk a little bit about why those two hit the portal, what the future holds for them, and just, you know, why they decide to do this.
Yeah, this is, like you said, this is expected, and probably, to be honest, known this was going to happen. I know some fans are like, I thought they would just give up basketball. Well, they also know right now they're probably going to make a lot more money in the transfer portal than they would going and getting a job out of college. So you definitely take advantage of that COVID season. Ethan Morton kind of hinted this to me early in the season that he was going to go somewhere else next year, and, you know, never came out and actually said that, but he's a guy that probably, you know, loves Purdue so much he would stay if he could, but there's just no room. Purdue still is oversigned by one, so we have to see how that plays out with the six freshmen coming in and what you do with your scholarship situation, the way it's currently constructed. But Morton should go somewhere and find a place where he can play and contribute a lot, and also just use his leadership ability. The guy's, you know, an all-time great communicator, leader, and accepted a role this year that most people in his position who were a starter the year before wouldn't have done. Mason Gillis the same way. He's a guy who would have started at a lot of Power 5 programs and probably is about to earn himself a nice little payday going somewhere. I don't want to speculate, but you think of what's going on at Notre Dame, what's going on at Oklahoma State, and the ties that those two head coaches have to Purdue, mm-hmm. You would think that there might be some interest there. But, you know, the time is kind of here for those two to move on. They've done a lot for Purdue, and now it's time to get a bigger role and maybe even cash in a little bit on it. So I don't fault them at all for not playing their final season at Purdue. They've given a lot to this program and are big reasons why Purdue was in a national championship game.
But you're telling me, too, there's that we expect at least one more to probably head into the portal at one point. We're still oversigned by one?
Yeah, whether that's somebody accepting not having a scholarship next year or an incoming freshman deciding to go to prep school, you got to make it work somehow. Or if somebody jumps into the transfer portal who is currently on the roster. And, you know, I hate to speculate names when you do that. I see the Twitter world and a lot of people do that, and they're saying this guy needs to get in the portal or we need to get rid of this guy. And I don't think Matt Painter is in a position like a lot of coaches where he's just going to tell a guy, you need to leave so we can have a spot for this guy. He's very much about, you know, the academic side of it as much as he is the sports side of it. And we lose focus of that and the ultimate win now, pay everybody, put together a team on the fly through the transfer portal era, which is, as Matt Painter says, sometime going to come back and bite him in the butt. But right now, that's what he does, and that's the way he's going to do it.
Sam, before I let you go, could I expect any coaching changes to this Purdue staff? Anybody, you get that far, it draws a lot of interest. And I know, maybe not towards the top in the top assistants, but maybe somebody in an analyst role or something. What do you expect to happen with this coaching staff?
In this day and age, and this all started with a firing at SMU, has started this whole crazy coaching carousel where now all of a sudden you have Kentucky's coach leaving to go to Arkansas, which is, you think is mind-blowing, but it's just created this whole whirlwind, and now you've got an opening at BYU because of the Kentucky opening. So I don't see anybody leaving. I know, obviously, there's at least a couple people on the staff who are eyeing becoming a head coach in the future, but I don't know if that's going to be the case this year. But in the future, I see – obviously, P.J. Thompson is on the fast track to being a head coach. It's just when and where that happens. And you don't just want to take a head coaching job to take a head coaching job because it can be kind of career suicide if you go to the wrong situation.
Sam King, Lafayette Journal and Courier, does a great job and was doing such a great job. I mean, you had some good seats down there, too. I think you tweeted out, you're like, I don't think I'll ever have a better seat than this in my life.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to sit front row midcourt for a national championship game very often. I don't even get that good of a seat when I go to these high school games in town. So,
well, who's not giving you good seats? Who do we need to holler at?
Well, I mean, I guess I could move down to the front row if I wanted to, but I like to sit center court to kind of see more of everything. And, there you don't really get to pick your seat. And I just happened to be in a good situation where I was pretty close to the middle of the courts and could see almost everything.
Are they not giving you good seats at Case? Do they not remember you around there, or do they remember you? That's why you don't get seats at Case.
Yeah, they're probably like, you got to go upstairs. We don't recognize you.
Get up at the upper level. We don't want to see you down here. Sam King, Journal and Courier, is always great. And now he, what do you do now? Because you're not covering pretty, I guess you transition to the spring game for football. And then, what, do you go into hibernation for the summer? What do you do?
I'll probably be on some high school softball, football, or high school baseball, track and field, things like that here in the coming weeks. But I don't know. I'm mulling taking a week off or something. I don't know how that works, but maybe it's time after a couple of years of no breaks.
Maybe you should go out. I was just out in Phoenix. It was lovely. You should check it out.
Yeah, I might have to do that. I haven't seen it in a while.
Sam King, Journal and Courier. Buddy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, bud.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Sam. Take care. Sam's always great. That's tough, man. You're doing all that traveling, right? And he works. Guy works hard. Is your mobile hotspot working hard for you? It's not getting the job done. You need to get an on-the-go connection you can count on with Now Wi-Fi Pass. Just $10 for 30 days. Sometimes you need fast internet, like right now, no matter where you are, because your favorite gamer's live stream isn't going to wait for you to get home, and neither will your boss who's standing by in a video conference that you totally forgot about. It's Friday. Happens. So, when you get the need for speed, you can connect in seconds with Now Wi-Fi Pass. Over 22 million Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspots nationwide. You don't need any additional equipment, and there are no commitments and no cancellation fees. That means you can dip in and dip out whenever you want, no strings attached. Now through April 24th, get 30 days of Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspot access and unlimited data for only $10 with no commitments and no cancellation fees. Visit Xfinity.com/Wi-Fi Pass to find a hotspot today. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. After promo, regular rates apply. Currently $20 for 30 days. Pricing subject to change, axle speeds vary, and are not guaranteed. We're coming right back, and we're wrapping up the Hammer Down Show next. 1017 The Hammer, 1017TheHammer.com. Hammer Down Show, wrapping up for the week on 1017 The Hammer, 1017TheHammer.com. Just a quick check-in with the old Masters Tournament. Adam Shank sitting in 17th right now. Even on the tournament, he was 1-under for the day. Still plenty of golfers above him that are out on the course here, and it's not been, I mean, everybody's basically around like plus 1 to 1-under. That's in contention. Very few rounds that were 2-under or better today. I think there's only been like 2 or 3. It's been tough sledding out there. But congratulations. He'll make the cut. We'll see what happens. Bryson is sitting at number 1. He's 7-under through 12 today. We have Max Homa and Scottie Scheffler at 6-under. So, I mean, it's a lot if you're talking about trying to get up there into the top 5. But I don't think top 10 is, I mean, top 10's like 2 strokes right now. 100% doable over the next 2 days. So we'll see how it shakes out. But shout out to Adam. Absolutely amazing. Tomorrow, I know you're heading out maybe for the challenge. You might be heading out for Spring Fest, all that stuff, campus. There is lots of action as well. Don't want to forget baseball kicks off tonight. 3 games versus Michigan State. They play 2 o'clock. The 3 o'clock tomorrow? 2 or 3 tomorrow? I think it's 3 because if you go over to Folk Field on Saturday, soccer is hosting a friendly against Ball State. That's at 2 o'clock. You don't even need tickets for that one. So if you're going over to baseball, stop over there, watch a little soccer real quick. Cheer on those ladies. But yeah, plenty of stuff going on campus this weekend. Men's tennis is playing today and Sunday as well, Big Ten matchups. So plenty good action on campus. You'll love to see that. And it just looks like the weather's going to be gorgeous for you on Saturday. By the way, Sunday for baseball, they do that bark at the park thing on Sunday, so we can bring your dog, and then they have matching dog bowls on Sunday giveaway. So I thought it was really cool. Just want to put that on your radar for this weekend because it looks like the weather is going to cooperate. And of course, if you can't get it out to the spring game, it is on BTN starting at noon. And I'm glad we're able to get this like thing back to somewhat of a game. I get it when we go to like more of a scrimmage format for someone. In the past, it's made sense. You've had some personnel issues. You don't want to get people, hurt and all that. But Tom with some great points and things you want to know. I'm very excited to see how this wide receiver room shakes out. And really, the essence of the spring game is you love the backups, right? Nate Baird always says, the most favorite player on the team is always the backup quarterback because there's always like those possibilities. And I'm excited to see who's going to be the backup quarterback after, listening to Tom talk about two big guys and big arms and stuff here out of the freshman. Looking forward to seeing that. And it's going to be great. Hopefully you get a chance to check it out. Get out there, support the Boilermakers. Again, it's free to attend to go on out. And it's going to be gorgeous out. So why not get the kids out? Go watch some football. Get hype for some of these transfer guys that have come in. And we say 16 different players. We're going to get a little taste of that. I'm all for it. Some of the stuff's going to be hard to kind of read, like the offensive linemen. I get it. But again, we didn't have this last year. It's nice that we're getting it back this year. It's great that we're getting great weather for it. And it's a good point here to start shifting into talking about football here now that basketball's wrapped up. So hopefully we see you out there this Saturday. Again, you've got football at noon, then you can get on over there to soccer and baseball. Just make it a whole afternoon out there. Make it a whole afternoon. Don't forget our bets for the night. We do like Jonathan Wicks over that 5.5 strikeouts. We're also fading the White Sox yet again this evening. Stiff old win out to center field. Come on now. Flexen's going to give up some bombs. I got a feeling here. So that's the plays for this evening. Be watching Masters all weekend. We're going to come back on Monday. Gosh, what do we got going on? I mean, we'll try to recap what we've seen on Saturday with the spring game. We'll have an idea of the Pacers or where the Pacers are at in the playoff hunt. And maybe we'll be talking about an Adam Schenk top 10 at the Masters. Who knows? It's a world of possibilities. Please enjoy your weekend. And a big thank you for listening. Oh, big thank you to Tom Deanhart and Sam King. We'll get the interviews up for you at 1017thehammer.com as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. It's all there. Enjoy that weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday on 1017 The Hammer and 1017thehammer.com.